For those of you who might look up here and have a confused look on your face, a fresh face up here in the pulpit, my name is Father Thomas Hahn. I spent 2 years here on the weekends and during the week as a seminarian and as a deacon, and I was ordained a priest this past June, and I got a little bit of time away from my parish back in Indiana, and I decided to spend my vacation in sunny Potomac Falls for a few days. You can tell me how stupid I am later, but I've enjoyed it. And it's a bit of a testimony to Father Saunders and Father Shear and Father Sly and how kind they were to me and how comfortable I was with them that they had opened their home to me, and I've enjoyed being with them the last few days. I'm happy to report that after 9 months or so of priesthood, that the priesthood is full of joys. And I'm sure you see that in the faces of Father Saunders and Father Shear and Father Sly, but I can testify that too, that every day in front of me, God's grace is at work, and I have a privileged vantage point to see that work of God. I of course, the priest's life is punctuated and filled with the sacraments, that great joy of baptizing a child into the grace of God, to offer the Mass every single day is quite a privilege. Also, a great grace of the priesthood is instruction, to feed the souls of those who seek to inform their intellect. That takes the form of especially marriage prep. What a graced moment that is, those 6 to 8 months before a couple is married in the sacrament of marriage. I have that privileged time with them to help them understand what marriage is for, what that intimacy is for. In other ways, I get to instruct on Scripture, and I'm continually amazed at the depth of Scripture, that every detail matters, and each of it speaks to us, because indeed it is inspired by God and meant for us. The gospel, which was quite a gospel today, is filled with details. And you think, boy, couldn't they have said it in a few less words? But I dare say that the author, John the Evangelist, meant every detail, and every detail is meant for us today. A few details just in the first paragraph are quite enlightening. First, the town that Christ finds himself in. Secondly, the time of day that he spends near the well. And thirdly, the fact he's near a well. Those details actually have quite a bit of meaning, and we should dig in and see what those details mean for us. First of all, he's in a town called Sychar, which is in Samaria. Any Jew would have avoided the whole area of Samaria because they were kind of half-breeds. Jews had married Gentiles, and they became unclean. Any contact with these people, especially with a woman of the Sumerian people, would have made them ritually unclean and not allowed them to worship in the temple and in the synagogues. It would have been borderline dangerous. So Christ finding himself in this town and leading his apostles there probably would have raised some eyebrows. Essentially, this is telling us that Christ's mission is for all. He did not come just to save the Jews. Salvation does come through the Jews, and his words of salvation comes to them primarily so that they might be a light to the nations, but he indeed wishes all to be saved in him. The second detail we find out is the time of day. It's noon. What detail does that tell us about this story? Well, first of all, if you're in Samaria and you have the opportunity to carry huge jugs of water, why would you choose to get them in the middle of the day? Wouldn't you get them early in the morning when the sun's not up, or at the end of the day when the sun's gone down, it's cooler? And that's typically what was done. Women would come together in flocks to fill their jars full of water. We find this woman at noon, alone. This tells us a bit about her reputation. We find out later in the story that she has had 5 husbands, and the one she has right now is not her husband. She might have a bit of reputation in the town, and she's probably been shunned by the other women and the other men. So she has to go alone in the heat of the day. But yet she's desperate for that water because it's her life source. The thirst she has is not prevented by the difficulty of the weight of the water or the time of day. And that speaks to all of us here. We, too, have a thirst. Sometimes it's difficult to quench that thirst, but we must quench the thirst. what thirst am I speaking of? Certainly of water. This is a necessity of life. But human beings, we all must admit, are a bundle of infinite thirsts. We're constantly wanting something. We have infinite desires, and we're constantly seeking to fill them. Ultimately, by this dialogue, by this woman coming at the middle of the day and meeting Christ here, where she hopes to quench her thirst, the first words Christ speaks to her is, "Woman, give me some water." Interesting. Christ speaks of his desire for water too, his thirst. He's teaching us that he desires us, and our desires, our infinite desires, are really ordered to him, or should be. Even though we go to every well in the world seeking to fulfill those infinite desires, we say we should desire him. Him alone. He can fulfill our desires. The church knows this. Everybody speaks of the catechism and thinks of it as a dry statement of doctrine. The first paragraph of the main section of the catechism speaks, "The desire for God is written in the human heart because man is created by God and for God, and God never ceases to draw man to himself. Only in God will he find the truth and happiness he never stops searching for." The catechism begins with this desire in our heart, and we're trying to fulfill it. In the first paragraph, it tells us where to fulfill that desire. It is God. In that section on prayer, towards the end of the catechism, it writes, "Whether we realize it or not, prayer is the encounter of God's thirsts with ours. God thirsts that we may thirst for him." A beautiful image. The Psalms speak of that thirst for God over and over again. Psalm 42 says, "As the deer longs for the running streams, so my soul longs for you, my God. A thirst is my soul for God, the living God. When shall I go and behold him face to face?" Psalm 63, "O God, you are my God, for you I long. For you my soul is thirsting. Like a dry, weary land without water, so my soul desires you." Beautiful words from the Psalms and from the Catechism to remind us, just like Christ is trying to remind us in the Gospels, our hearts are restless until they rest in God, in the words of St. Augustine. God alone fulfills our hearts. The last detail of the Gospel we should probably make note of is the well itself. It's not unimportant detail in the Gospel. The well is deliberate. Certainly it's the setting of the story, but also it speaks to us in saying, where do we go to fulfill our desires? What well of our life do we hope to find satisfaction? Is it pleasure? Is it contentment? Is it convenience? Is it the worldly powers? Is it money? What well do we hope will satisfy our heart? This well represents the well that the woman was attending to. But certainly it has a deeper meaning. Certainly we wouldn't just say it's the setting of the story. Wells in the Old Testament and in the New have always been associated with weddings, with marriage. Certainly Jacob meets his bride, Rebekah, at a well. Jacob meets Rachel at a well. Moses meets Zipporah at a well. So I don't think it's a small detail we should brush aside in this story either, that Christ meets this woman at a well. No, I don't think Christ intends to marry this woman, but he's speaking of a different type of marriage. And this detail can also be furthered by the fact that the first public ministry that Christ exhibits to the world is at a wedding, and there's water involved. Christ fills 6 stone jars of water and turns it into wine. And to further the point between the wedding feast at Cana and today's gospel is that the first words Christ says to his mother, "Woman, it is not my hour. What does this have to do with me?" And here today he says, "Believe me, woman, the hour is coming when you will worship the Father, neither here nor on the mountain nor in Jerusalem." There are definite connections between the wedding feast at Cana and here today. There's a wedding theme going on. What wedding are we talking about? It's not the woman at the well. Christ wishes to marry us. That woman at the well represents each and every one of us, those that have that infinite thirst, not sure where to find it to satisfy it. A woman who is sinful, and indeed we are all sinful. This woman represents us, that we are unworthy of this intimacy and union with God, and yet God desires us even more. The wedding theme in the New Testament is not finished in this story either. It completes in the book of Revelation. That vision of John the Evangelist on the island of Patmos, of the heavens, the end of the world, and the eternal liturgy going on in heaven. And there's a marriage there. There's marriage and there's thirst. In the second to last chapter, John says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. He saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven, prepared as a bride, adorned for her husband. Christ says, 'Behold, I make all things new. To the thirsty, I will give from the fountain of the water of life without payment. Come, I will show you the bride.'" The fourth to last verse of the Bible, he says, "The Spirit and the bride say, 'Come.' And let him who hears say, 'Come.' And let him who is thirsty, come. Let him who desires take the water of life without price." The author John, Christ himself, is speaking to each and every one of us. If we are seeking to fulfill our desires, quenching our thirst anywhere else other than God, we are mistaken. That if we think a finite thing can fulfill our infinite heart, we are wrong. The Gospels, the Psalms, the Catechism, and indeed our entire faith is pointing to one thing and one thing only, that God alone fulfills the human heart. The story here is we don't deserve that. We've turned away from Him many times, and this is the story of Lent, that we turn back to Him. Lent is the story and the journey of conversion, and today the church presents this Gospel to remind us, turn towards Him who will fulfill your thirst. We don't deserve it, we're wounded, but God thirsts for us. We should stop going to those other wells, or at least thinking they will satisfy us. We could think of our whole lives as a new marriage prep, preparing for that final marriage where all of our desires will be fulfilled in that heavenly Jerusalem.